Ty James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're gonna like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Begin countdown. 6... 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. Welcome to the Guy James Show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We hope to provide you with an entertaining and informative Guy James Show today. How you doing? Are you ready for Christmas? Got all your shopping done? Do you do any shopping? What's your modus operandi at the holiday time? Are you a Christmas Scrooge? Do you celebrate Christmas at all? Speaking of Christmas and the holidays, I want to first off tonight, this afternoon, thank everybody down at the Collier County Democratic Club in Naples, Florida. We had our annual holiday banquet last night. Man, the food was great. We had Elvis there for entertainment. And the company was best of all. Our good friends George Willis and Dale Danforth and Chuck Mulkey and Gene Vaccaro and Ed Hummelstein and Laurel Pastor and a whole lot of others were there and certainly enjoyed it. I had the privilege of speaking to the group last night, and it was a great honor as always, and I did enjoy it very, very much. So it was just a nice evening, very nice evening. I hope you get out and enjoy the season a little bit, however, in whatever fashion you do. Hey, I do want at the top of the program today make mention that Billy Shears, our music director, has provided us with some great music today for our breaks, and we've got a few little entertainment ditties to go with you, go with those as well. So we hope to have a good show today. You can give us a call at 866-546-5254. I guess I better turn the phones on there. There we go. 866-546-5254. Lots in the news. A whole lot in the news, actually, right now. And we'll get to everything sooner or later. Some things in the news maybe a little more than they should be. Call me a Scrooge. Call me a nasty or whatever. And I know some people will think so. But please stop showing us all day solid coverage of the deal on Mount Hood. I'm so sorry for those people. I really am. It's a tragedy that they've died up there, and it appears that probably all three of them have. But, you know, China's threatened to dump trillions of U.S. dollars onto the world market. Iran's switching from the dollar to the euro, and soldiers are still dying in Iraq and Afghanistan. And that whole stinking rotten world is still out there. Report some of that. It's just, it's odd to me. And I will never understand why the press chooses a certain story, the media chooses a certain story to just push it and push it and push it. Those are three precious lives that were probably lost. And we're sorry about that, but, you know, let's get on with the news. I wouldn't care if it was my family up there, anybody's family, I'd say the same thing. Enough is enough, and just don't get too carried away with it, and I think that's kind of what they've done in a way. with that particular story. Do you agree or disagree? I wonder. We see Mr. Bush is going to bring in some more troops, most likely. We'll be talking about that today. You know, there's one thing I can't... I can't ever forget. I'm going to be going to Washington, and we'll do the show there for a couple of days in January, late January, the week of the State of the Union. I'll be going there for the State of the Union speech. Junior Bush invited me personally. No. That's not how it is. We'll be going there to cover a conference that's on, and we'll be doing a show from the Capitol building one of those days and the Mayflower Hotel one of the others. So it's going to be a rare privilege to get to do that. I was just thinking, when I was thinking ahead and going, making my plans to go to Washington, my wife and I were there, I think it was 3 years ago, this January the 23rd or 22nd, whatever the anniversary of the State of the Union speech was, and Joe Biden, and I will never forget this, I think I learned a lesson on this particular day. Joe Biden looked me square in the eye and does like he does, gets up nose to nose with you, looked me square in the eye and was shaking his finger and told me that he guaranteed the troops would be out of Iraq by April. This is in January of 2004. And he guaranteed me the troops would be out of there by April. I questioned his statement. And he reacted like he always does, with scorn that I didn't reside in Washington and I didn't know what was really happening. And I'm never going to forget that. You know, that's Joe Biden. But that's also the attitude of the Washingtonians, the people that are there. You are outside the Beltway and you don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. We hear that so often. And frankly, I really resent it. And Joe, I would like to remind you that, no, the troops didn't come home that April in 2004. So, just didn't work out, Joe, but your prediction was so far off it wasn't funny. And today is my first chance to comment on last week's televised, full-blown goodbye ceremony to Donald Rumsfeld. After about 15 minutes of it, I became sickened at what could only be described as an obscene spectacle created to give Donald Rumsfeld some sort of a triumphant send-off as though nothing is wrong, and he was some sort of a spectacular success as Secretary of Defense. Who was it? I forget who it was now that said Donald Rumsfeld was the greatest Secretary of Defense we ever had. Somebody dumber than hell, that's for sure. But, you know, nothing could be farther from the truth. And I'm not talking about the event itself. The bands played and marched very nicely, in fact. It's the fact that they had the gall to present this man with honors that are totally undeserved. This pompous ass, this arrogant, smirking, condescending fool, Donald Rumsfeld, should have moved out of his office in the dark of the night and disappeared so we never had to look at that sneering face of his again. The truth is, and I mean this, I would have preferred to see him let out of the Pentagon in handcuffs and shackles through a parade of parents who have lost their kids due to his malfeasance and his immoral acts while heading up our military. And if there's any justice in the world, the man will be tried at The Hague for war crimes against humanity someday. And I just hope and pray the world community demands his prosecution and his conviction. He's guilty on a massive scale. But it's come to be expected that this is simply how our Junior Bush and his devoted accomplices do things in their pretend world of their own brand of honor and glory for all things Bush. And I'm sure most of you remember the nice little send-off Junior Bush gave George Tenet and Tommy Franks, two more of his accomplices, who instead of getting medals deserve to be held accountable for the horrible war that Bush says we now find ourselves in. And the speeches. Oh, God, the speeches. How could anyone have written them without laughing out loud? Actually, how could anybody listen to them without cracking up? How could anybody with a mind of their own stand there and listen to this man being described as a great leader. How could any rational human being believe that this nation is, as was described in one of the speeches, that the nation's better off because of Donald Rumsfeld's leadership? That's quite possibly the most idiotic statement yet from this administration. And true to form, CNN and Fox broadcast this farce as though nothing is wrong, and the nation should pay homage to this despicable man. True to form, the networks presented this, I don't know what else you could call it, but some sort of an Alice in Wonderland event, as though the whole nation owes Donald Rumsfeld some sort of a debt of gratitude. I think not. That ceremony was probably the greatest example that I can recall of the TV networks actually really and truly making a silk purse out of a sow's ear. There's facts, and there's fiction, and the Pentagon parade for Rumsfeld was in fact based on pure fiction. It's beyond me how anybody could have watched this ceremony and still claim the media is controlled by the liberals. That's way beyond my imagination. Just imagine how many people watched that charade and said, gee, isn't that nice? And they're honoring the nice Mr. Rumsfeld. That's exactly what the networks were saying. Look at the ceremony for the nice Mr. Rumsfeld. I watched that and I thought, really, a parade for Vladdy the Impaler or Ivan the Terrible or Attila the Hun would have been more appropriate. The press still remains loyal to this administration, and shamefully, they'll remain so until Bush is kicked out of the White House and put on a plane bound for Crawford, Texas. And that can't be soon enough for me, and I know for many of you as well. This whole fantasy land thing by the Bushes is just totally getting out of control. Never has there been a man less deserving of that ceremony the other day than Donald Rumsfeld. Nobody that I can ever think of. Unless maybe Robert McNamara. Have a lot of contempt for him as well. At least he admitted it years later. And speaking of contempt, did you see this story? Did you see this story about the Marine officer who died in Iraq? She was the highest ranking female to yet be killed in Iraq, Marine Major Megan McClung. A public affairs officer who became the highest-ranking woman killed in Iraq when she died 2 weeks ago. She'd been escorting Oliver North and a Fox News crew through Ramadi just moments before a roadside bomb took her life. Oliver North, as she just had dropped off the Fox News crew. Fox News spokesman said that she couldn't confirm North's involvement. You know, Fox sent North there to propagandize this war, and he did. He got a hold of a young corporal, and between the corporal and Ollie North, it made it sound like things were just peachy in Iraq. And the corporal was telling how all the great things they've done there, speaking to Mr. North as sir. Yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. Must have said it 50 times. My question is, why does Ollie North, the big, bad, brave soldier that he claims to be, a man of tremendous bravado in his own mind, a criminal, why did he need an escort? He's Mr. Tough Guy. He always likes to say how he's Mr. Tough Guy. What the hell did they have to escort him around for? Many journalists leave the safe areas without military escorts. Many. But the high-profile ones get the escorts. But I do question why one Colonel Oliver North would need an escort around Baghdad, being the very brave and tough guy that he is. I resented seeing that story on Fox News. Somebody sent it to me, the video of it, him standing there with that crap grin on his face that he always has. I resented watching him there with that corporal, prompting the corporal to say things that, to make it look good, to give some of that Fox News propaganda. But I resented a hell of a lot more when I find out that this poor woman was killed. Marine Major Megan McClung was killed, having to do with escorting Colonel Oliver North around Baghdad. No, actually not Baghdad, Camp Ramadi. That's a disgusting story to me. A life wasted. A life wasted to make things nice for Colonel Oliver North and the Fox Network. Can't imagine. Here we're going to pause for a quick break. How about a little dose of Granny B here?
This is Granny B, and I was just thinking about Christmas. There's a nip in the air here in Crossroads, so people are getting into the Christmas spirit. But I just can't help thinking about the troops over in Iraq, getting killed one by one and two by two, while we go about our Christmas shopping and decorating our homes for the holidays. And I can't help thinking about the folks who sent them there, the people in Washington and all their festivities. There are 24 holiday parties at the White House alone. You have to wonder how many of the military-industrial contractors will be whining and dining and whooping it up at those parties. They have a lot to celebrate. They've raked in billions of dollars on the backs of those who have sacrificed so much to make them wealthier. The president says he sleeps just fine, thank you very much, even though he's delaying telling us what he's going to do about that awful mess he got us into until after all the holiday partying. So while our president is sleeping well and partying well, and delay in bringing our troops home, let's do some things to make the Christmases of the troops, our veterans, and their families just a little bit less blue. Please do some of your holiday shopping at Sears. Sears supports our troops by providing full pay and benefits to their employees who are called to active National Guard duty. Be sure to tell the sales clerks that's why you're shopping at Sears. Give a donation to an organization that helps veterans, especially the disabled, such as Disabled American Veterans, the DAV. Go to AmericaSupportsYou.com and send a holiday message to our troops. Seek out your neighbors who have family members in the military and make it a point to thank them for their sacrifice. What could possibly be a better way to celebrate the holidays than to help those who have helped us feel good? This is Granny B, and I was just wondering.
No. Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show. Love to have you call us, 866-546-5254. Your point of view matters to us, whether you agree or disagree with what we have to say. Your point of view always matters to us. What do you think about George Bush's his obvious desire to send more troops, I almost said to Vietnam, to Iraq? You know, he always said he got him. He always tried to get himself off the hook by saying, "Well, you know, I listen to the generals on the ground in Iraq. I listen to the officers on the ground." He's so fond of saying that. And now we know that the Joint Chiefs are saying not to send in more troops without some sort of a defined mission. Their words, defined mission. And it's being reported that he doesn't give a damn about what they have to say. He's going to do it anyway. I think bringing in more troops is not any sort of a tactical thing on Bush's part. I think it's a stall tactic. I think he's bringing them in just to stall until he can figure out what the hell to do, or maybe to think this whole thing is going to get better somehow on its own. We've heard a lot of opinions on this so far. Many opinions. Many ex-military, many present military people. And I don't see where anybody, maybe except for John Phoney McCain, I don't see where anybody thinks that a few thousand more troops will do any good. Who said that it would do any good? The Joint Chiefs don't think it would be, you know. I don't think a lot of people understand just how big Baghdad is. And so we bring in another 20,000 troops or so. It's not going to lock down that city. It's not going to stop the insurgents. And probably it will cause the insurgents and the al-Sadr group to be more vicious, more violent, more determined to get the American military out of their land. That's what they want. You hear less and less talk about Iraq, about al-Qaeda nowadays, and more talk about the militia groups on both sides. You hear more talk about the governmental corruption going on. Have you seen where now the Minister of Electricity has escaped from prison? He was in prison because of graft and corruption, and they're claiming that the Americans helped him escape. Who was it? Saddam's nephew? All sorts of guys, about a half a dozen or so in the past several weeks, have escaped mysteriously from prison. And it's mostly that they bought their way out. Are we doing any good there? Are we teaching these people anything about democracy? I guess the graft and corruption part of it, yes. We have plenty of that right within our own military-industrial complex with the complicity of the Bush administration and his friends, his Donald Rumsfelds and his Dick Cheneys and all those folks. So I guess we have a lot that we could teach them about graft and corruption. And I'm certainly hoping that the new Congress, when Henry Waxman and John Conyers, a couple of Democratic pit bulls, and I mean that in the good way, a couple of pit bulls get in there and start digging the dirt on this military-industrial complex and show this nation just how damn dirty and corrupt this administration really is. I cannot wait for that. And I tell you this, there's a lot of talk going on about impeachment, yay or nay, and whether it would make the Democrats look bad if they did it, and whether they have time to do it in the 2 years, and whether they actually could do it, because you need two-thirds of the Senate to comply, and they don't think you could ever get that. You'd have to get, 16 Republicans to go along with all of the Democrats, and that may be that might be a tough trail to go down. But I think when these... In fact, I just don't think. I will predict. I'll stick my neck out and predict that when all the filth and corruption is exposed that has to do with the direct involvement of this administration, with your Dick Cheneys and your Rumsfelds and your Bushes and all those people and their friends, I think the public will demand the impeachment of George W. Bush. Not just political activists. I think the public at large will demand that the man be impeached and convicted, because there is so much filth and corruption floating beneath the surface of this administration that the public doesn't know about. That some of it's been out there, but the public didn't seem to give a damn because the press didn't cover it properly. Many, many, many stories have had no legs in the press because the press just didn't do their jobs on it. But you can bet that Henry Waxman and John Conyers and some others are going to start digging, and they know where they're going to start right now. And when a lot of this hits the newspapers and hits the airways, you're going to hear an outcry from the American people. And I will predict that when this coming year ends, when 2007, at the end of it comes, December 31st, 2007, that the team of Bush and Cheney will no longer be intact. Somebody's going to go. I would put my money on Cheney. He'll resign for health reasons and then hopefully get him prosecuted for his complicity in illegal acts by this administration. That's what I hope happens. That's what I predict will happen. But much of the problem here is because of the press. They have not done their job, and they're doing it a little better now because they've seen the handwriting on the wall. They've seen the public sentiment turn downward toward the Bush administration, and so now many of the people in the press are joining the public and going along. It's a cowardly way to do things, but if that's what it takes, well, fine. But it's just like all the stories we read in the paper now about the troop increases, as the administration is putting it, troop increases. It's not a troop increase. It's an escalation of the war by Junior Bush. That's exactly what it is. It's nothing else. It's an escalation of the war. He's putting all of his chips out on the table, hoping to go double or nothing, that he can somehow win this deal, and he's willing to sacrifice whatever number of American troops he needs to win his bet. That's how low he is. That's how psychotic he is. That's what a sociopath this man is. And I hate to keep talking about him, but my God. Get real. Hey, let's go with the phones here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, Guy. Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil.
How you doing?
Good.
It's not just Bush. It's every damn member of Congress that is not challenging him as well. That's allowing this guy to continue unchallenged.
Well, I feel that way. I agree with you, and I hope this. I hope these investigations are deep. I hope they're wide, and there's a lot of complicity, and I certainly hope that Congress will listen to the message that we sent them a little over a month ago, because we did send a message.
Well, I my Republican congressman, I call, and I make the call anyway. Supposedly they're supposed to record it, and keep a record of it. He like many of the Republicans in Congress, the protectors and cheerleaders for Bush, the warmongers, skipped Vietnam. Just like Bush did, just like Cheney, just like everybody in that Project for a New American Century, which planned this thing.
Yeah.
Doug Feith, the Office of Special Plans, Dick Cheney's own intelligence agency that bypassed the CIA and the FBI and all that. Stephen Hadley, the National Security Advisor, Elliot Abrams, our buddy from Iran-Contra, he's found his way over there to the Middle East.
Another criminal that this Congress approved him taking the office that he has, and they've got short memories, don't they? The man's a felon.
Once he and Negroponte got over there, all of a sudden we got, death squads going. That's right out of the Iran-Contra playbook there.
Yeah, when I heard those two were in, I expected Ollie North to be hired any day, but they never did get around to him. He was making too much money on the media.
Too much on Fox, Yeah. And I'll tell you, I wake up sick every day, Guy, this Bush, you know, the boy king, lied to start the war. I mean, we got documents and testimony from officials from here until, you know, next Tuesday. And that should be a slam dunk for the American people. It still boggles my mind, you know, that this guy deliberately lied to start a war.
Well, I think when the investigation starts, I think the public probably going to pay a little more attention to it now. We've seen the trend change somewhat in the public. And I think a lot of people who were deaf, you know, looked upon this with deaf ears, will now come around, even Republicans and a lot of independents who still had faith in him. I think a lot of people will drop him like a hot rock once they get the entire ugly mess thrown in front of them.
The thing is, and I talked to the staffer in my congressman's office, and he said, well, next month the Democrats will be in charge. And I say, you know, not one more kid should have to die. You know, these kids should be home yesterday.
That's right.
And what the hell your guy's job description is to uphold the Constitution and to keep a check on the, oversight of the executive branch, you know, the three co-equal branches. You know, if my job is to, you know, go to work and I'm supposed to make widgets, you know, and I show up and you're paying me, but I don't make your widgets, I'm fired.
Yeah, particularly if you don't show up Monday through Friday.
I tell you, guy, the outrage I have, not just at, well, Bush, you know, he's insane. You know, he's the boy king. You know, Cheney and Rumsfeld and Feith and Hadley and Bolton, you know, that whole PNAC crew that launched this war. The media. Oh, I get so mad at the.
Well, I spoke to the group last night where I was for this banquet, and I told them, and I mean this. Our biggest job right now is to make sure the Democrats do what we elected them to do. We're going to have to ride herd on our own people to get at those other people that you're talking about, and the responsibility is going to lie with the Democrats now. And if they don't do the job, they don't deserve their offices.
Well, you know what, guy? I want to tag on to that, if you don't mind. I want to take it one layer further. The responsibility is on us. I would like to get a survey of the callers today and find out how many of them have actually taken 5 minutes to call their congressman and senator, or how many of them have actually invested, 24 cents for a postage stamp on a postcard?
Yeah.
You know, and
I would say you find a high percentage of our listeners have.
Well, let's check it out, man. Yeah. I mean, the congressmen, they've demonstrated for 6 years that they're not doing anything.
Well, they're going to have to now. I mean, the Democrats are going to run the show, and they're going to have to take over. They're going to have to take the reins and drive this wagon now. And if they don't,
I tore into Pelosi's office today and Harry Reid's, and I'm not going to wait to January to start calling. You know, I mean,
yep.
This is.
I know. I share your frustration. Hey, I got to run. I got a board full here. Thanks very much for your call.
Okay, Guy. Yep. Thank you.
Bye now. Let's go over here to line two. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Yeah, this is Sarge. How you doing?
Hi, Sarge.
I want to share a story. I got hurt, several injuries during my military service.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that happened was I tore my knee up real, real bad, and they had to do a couple of surgeries on it. And degeneration is present in that knee, and a lot of times that knee gets so bad that the pain is so awful that tears just stream from my eyes, and no matter how I move that leg, it never stops hurting, and it's just like someone's just grinding your knee to pieces. You know, it's just like a vice just crushing the bones. And I got that in service, and I don't get what I was promised from it. And last night, it was really one of the worst pains I've ever had with it. And all I could think about was, I was listening to Malloy, and all I could think about was Nancy Pelosi and John Conyers Jr. and all of them saying, impeachment's off the table. Impeachment's off the table.
Well,
and I just kept wanting to cry, because I know a little bit about one investigation that's going on because I'm a part of it. And so far, I'm only moderately pleased with it. I'm not really, I haven't got the feeling that they're totally dedicated to it yet. And I'm kind of iffy about whether anything's going to come of it or not. So I'm going to say I hope you're right, but I think you're wrong. I don't see a whole lot changing.
Well, if it doesn't, there's going to be a whole lot change in 2008. I can promise you that. I don't think the people that went to the polls this time and voted these Democrats in are going to stand for them not getting the job done. I think you'll see apathy on the part of the Democrats like you've never seen it before if they don't go to Washington and be serious about what we sent them there to do. If they don't, they're asking for a catastrophe within their party, in the way I see it. You know, if they think that they can ride this wave of we're not them again, and let's face it, that's what a lot of it was this time, we're not them. They're not going to be able to ride that the second time. They're not going to be able to do it, and they better get serious.
Well, I tell you, I can see the point John Dean was making, is that there, you got these Republicans who, no matter how guilty Bush is of anything, they are too party loyal to vote for impeachment, even though this guy, you know, is convicted beyond, I mean, is guilty beyond any reasonable doubt. They still, for the sake of party unity, because they're so party loyal, they're not going to vote to impeach this guy. So no, even if we get it up to the level where it's voted on by the Senate, I just don't see it happening.
Well, do remember, Sarge, I know John Dean is drawing off of his experience, and do remember that Richard Nixon, probably the reason he resigned, is that a group of Howard Baker and some Republicans went to him and say, "Hey, look, bud, you got a problem." And I think that can happen again. I think there's some Republicans that can throw their weight behind this if and when all the dirt comes out.
Well, I don't know. I hope you're right. I really do. But I'm just getting more discouraged than I am encouraged. But then again, there is some action. I do see the Katrina investigation starting to take place, but I'm not seeing a real strong effort either, and that kind of bothers me, so I don't know.
Tell me, Sarge, how far do you have to travel to a VA hospital?
85 miles.
Okay.
No, more like 90 miles.
Okay, you got a pretty good drive. A lot of people don't have to go that far. Wow.
Yeah. See, that's why I don't even use the VA, and even with the problems that I have, they won't accept the previous doctor's diagnosis. They've got to run all those tests all over again.
Mm-hmm.
And so by the time they get around to giving me medicine that I need, it's already long past where it needs to be. In fact, they almost killed me one time with all of that trash, because they went 18 months trying to find just a fissure in my colon, and it took them 18 months. And by then, I was bleeding to death. They had already told me, make preparations because we don't see you being able to survive this. Hmm. And then one doctor just said, well, I'm going to break the pattern and I'm going to run this test. And he ran it and he found it. They did surgery, and 2 weeks later I was fine.
Hmm.
And that's how the VA operates, because they're so worried that somebody's going to put in for a pension increase or a pension, and they will just ignore doing the right thing. And that's why I don't even use the VA anymore. Wow. I just quit.
I know another gentleman that feels the same way and doesn't. He pays the freight and does it on his own.
Yeah. See, I had surgery in the VA after I got out, and I was in school. And the surgery they did a spinal tap. Well, the nurse in the recovery room was supposed to be watching me, because I was not supposed to move my head or anything, but the doctors didn't tell me that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I recovered, she was talking on the telephone to her boyfriend, and they were talking about what they were going to do that night, and she wasn't paying me any mind.
Mm.
And so I lifted my head up, and I looked over at her, and then I laid my head back down, and for 3 weeks, my head was just like someone was taking an axe and just splitting it open. And did you know she never knew I moved?
Wow.
And I mean, that's how they do at the VA. The VA thinks they don't get proper funding, and when they do something, they don't do it with any scientific notation. It's pathetic.
Well, I've heard... on many occasions, terrible remarks like that about VA. I know one that they have some glowing remarks about, but it's like anything else. You got some good ones and some bad ones.
Freckles asked what a Fisher was. That's a tear in the lining.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you, Guy.
And, Sarge, I'm counting you as one who has contacted your congressperson in the little poll we're taking today, because I know you have.
Well, I have contacted a lot of them,
yeah.
And truthfully, the only ones who have really given me any satisfaction, and strangely enough, it took a long time to get one of them active, but it was Nancy Pelosi, and then the first time I talked to Representative Clyburn.
Mm-hmm.
But Clyburn has been by far and away the best. Now, Barack Obama, they wasn't interested. They didn't want to talk.
Well, you're not one of their constituents. They don't care.
And the same thing with Kerry and
Clinton. You're usually not going to get very far talking to any of them that are not, that you're not in their constituency. You're really not.
That's... But now Clyburn, he's in South Carolina, mm-hmm. and he was more, he's the one that has actually done some investigations.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the one that's given me hope, and Pelosi seems to be mildly interested, so I'm hoping. But other than those two, I really haven't seen a lot.
Okay, well, I'm we had a caller that said let's keep track today how many people have contacted there, so you're counted among the ones that have. Hey, thanks for your call, Sarge.
All right, thank you.
Good to hear from you. You listen to the Guy James Show. Hey, I got a little ditty to play for you here. Come from a place called weeklyradioaddress.com, and I think you'll find this. Well, I found it funny.
Now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning. This week I'd like to report that we continue to be victorious in Iraq. In this far-off land, a brutal dictator once ruled, but then a great president freed the people. And now there are budding flowers, dancing children, and colorful festivals praising the kind president and his sensible policies. Excuse me, Mr. President. Well, it's former Secretary of State James Baker. I'm busy, Uncle Jim. I'm telling a story about flowers. Come back later.
Mr. President, the situation in Iraq is grave. We must change our policy.
But no, that's not
Did you read my Iraq study group report?
I skimmed it. Like I put that in a drawer for safekeeping. Look, I don't have time for this. Where was
but,
I?
But, sir.
Iraq, wreaths of victory continue to be thrown at our troops as the people sing songs of praise.
Mr.
And fields of marshmallow candies bloom.
Now, sir, in the report, I lay out my proposals for a timetable for withdrawal.
I can't hear that.
Other very sensible...
And the people sing, la, 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 stay the course, la, 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 I can't hear you, la.
Sir, you've got to listen to me.
I don't believe...
Fate of the entire region and the security of these United States.
The security of the... Oh, that's a good idea. Security. I got an intruder in the Oval Office.
Mr. President, wait. Listen to me.
Come on, sir.
Listen.
Please do not react,
sir. So, America was victorious. The troops and the Iraqi people lived together in harmony for happily ever after, and I got the medal for greatest president ever. The end. Good night and sleep tight.
Christmas time is here, happiness and cheer, fun for all that children call their favorite time of year. Snowflakes in the air, carols everywhere, olden times and ancient rhymes of love and dreams to share. Sleigh bells in the air, by the fireside and joyful memories there. Christmas time is here, families growing near. Oh, that we could always see such spirit through the year. Sleigh bells in the air, beauty everywhere, yuletide, the fireside and joyful memories there. Christmas time is here, families growing near. Oh, that we could always see such spirit through the year. Oh, that we could always see such spirit through the year.
Ah, yes, Christmas time is here, by Diana Krall. Hey, if you celebrate Christmas, are you getting into the Christmas spirit yet? I'm starting to, a little bit. Someone told me a cute story yesterday, and I was going to repeat it at the banquet last night, but I forgot. Said I had a really hard time when I was a little kid. I still believed in Santa Claus, but the only problem was so did my parents, and I never got anything for Christmas. That is a cute story. Yes, I've got some more I could tell, but anyway, it was that kind of a night. But But the food was good. Hey, I want to cheer you up a little bit. I'm going to tell you a funny story. And I think this is funny. I think this is entertaining. It came from the New Republic online. And I won't read the whole thing. But it was a story that may interest you about the changing of the guard in Washington and actually how it's done. On December 8th, the last working day of the 12-year Republican majority, the legendary, tough, and doughy-faced Ways and Means Committee Chairman, Bill Thomas, used the time allotted him on the floor for defending his huge tax extension bill to say goodbye. Thomas, who's retiring after nearly three decades in Congress, was not having a great week. In the middle of negotiations over his bill, he lost his office. Yes, departing members had to be out of their Hill offices before the lame duck session even began. After that, they were given a single cubicle and phone in a dank basement room to finish their legislative work, leading Thomas to freak out in a committee chair's meeting. On the floor on Friday, Thomas succumbed fully to the Republican mood of anguish drama, noting darkly that some Republicans have left willingly, some unwillingly, and weirdly suggesting that Maryland's Ben Cardin, leaving the House for the Senate, might be humming free at last. At the end of his speech, he burst into tears and proclaimed, "Mr. Speaker, I relinquish my time forever." However, he was up and talking again within minutes. There are two ways to leave Washington after an electoral rout: graciously, with emphasis on your accomplishment, or mournfully, and in great confusion, as Virgil describes the ruling elites abandoning Troy, wailing angrily, and clutching at the doors of their lost palace. This generation of Republicans came here in 1994, claiming they would never be seduced by power. But after 12 years in Washington, the wailing and clutching mood is the prevailing one. New York Representative John Sweeney, who watched his safe seat implode in the weeks leading up to November 7th, has not even been able to show up for votes. According to his friend, Representative Pete Sessions, he's in shock and has become physically ill from the experience of losing. It's hard not to get the impression that what the Republicans need as they leave the Hill is not fresh leadership or new ideas, but a big, big, long hug. Across Independence Avenue from the Capitol at the Rayburn House Office Building, movers buzz around the 181 House offices that have to be switched before Christmas. The desk and lamps stacked haphazardly along the walls make the building's coveted halls resemble a discount furniture warehouse. In the basement, the office for defeated Republicans turns out to be located across from the Rayburn Deli's kitchen, whose doors, in a final humiliation, are flung open, wafting nauseating frying oil smells into the halls and to their desk. Around the corner from the office, I run into a wan-looking older man standing alone by the elevator, wearing a white Oxford shirt and a dark blazer, no tie. He looks familiar. "Are you Kurt Weldon?" I ask. "I am," he says. "And then, how did you know?" Which is now a very reasonable question in Weldon land. He shakes my hand, then gives my shoulder an affectionate little squeeze. We chat about Ukraine, where he plans to travel on a foundation trip in January to help sort out the mess between Yanukovych and Yushchenko. As he boards his elevator, Weldon turns back and says, really nice to meet you," with one of the sincerest smiles I've ever seen. "But we won't have the chance to take a steak at Charlie Palmer together. Weldon leaves Washington tonight around 11, the writer says. And there's one more cute story on here. A walk through Rayburn's main levels reveals evidence everywhere of stages of grief. There's denial. Many defeated members haven't fully cleared out their offices a week after their move-out date. On Rayburn's plush fourth floor, Kentucky Representative Ed Whitfield has occupied drilling in National Parks enthusiast Richard Pombo's office anyway. And Pombo's stuff, including beautiful 5-foot-wide panoramic photographs of his San Joaquin Valley district, is piled up outside the door as though a peeved girlfriend had put him out on the curve. Someone could just throw a few garbage bags over the photo and make off with them. Looting is okay here, by the way. When word went out that fancy books memorializing Ronald Reagan had been left outside departing Florida Representative Clay Shaw's office, Republican aides rushed there to snag one. And there's bargaining. Staffers on cell phones dot the halls, whispering about their applications for the same few jobs everybody else wants. The popular phrase to describe the sorry state of things seems to be the situation. Oh, the situation. And anger. I love this. On the first floor of Rayburn, someone has torn the Capitol office directory down from the wall and ripped it to pieces. Viciously scribbled arrows point toward Mark Foley's name. Well, gosh, guys, you know, that's kind of how it is. Sometimes you win, and sometimes you lose. And I can't think of a time that I've been happier to see a bunch of Republicans leaving the Congress. And as you recall, we were pretty close in our predictions of how many we're going to leave Congress, and I'm so pleased about it, so pleased. But when we come back from the news at the top of the hour, we'll be talking about some of the things that that we're looking out for, some things that I'm looking out for, as I mentioned last night to the group. The thing we need to be really cognizant about right now, let's forget the Republicans for a while, let's make sure the Democrats do what we sent them there to do. I've talked to several of them and plan to talk to several more when I head to Washington next month. But I'm seeing evidence that some of them, it's just like here in Florida, okay? We've got this great big deal going on here in Florida about homeowners insurance and property taxes. I mean, my God, it's out of control. And every politician running for office here in Florida promised to do something, going to fight for the consumer in this insurance thing, going to fight for them. I hate it when I hear politicians use that word. I'm going to fight for you. Fight for me, hell. Just go do something, okay? I'll do my own fighting, but you go there and represent me. I hate it when I hear that. It's like, ah, geez, it's so yesterday when they say, I'm going to fight for you. I just want them to remember, you know, but here in Florida, as I was saying, every single one of them, yeah, I'm going to fight for you, and I'm going to fight for the consumer in this awful insurance industry and what they've done to the people here in Florida. And believe me, it's running a lot of people out of Florida, many. That won't slow the growth any here. Well, it'll probably slow the growth. There'll be more people moving out than normal, but the place will still grow as long as the sun shines here the way it does. Why, there'll always be people coming, but they're going to have to be people with money from now on. No longer is it going to be the situation where the auto worker from Detroit or Toledo, Ohio, or Gary, Indiana, or some of those places come and get a second home, buy a condo here, and come down and retire, and come down here and spend the winters here and go back to up north. It's not going to be that way anymore, because that class of people is almost gone. The auto workers and the folks that made the good money and had a little discretionary income to come to Florida and put a down payment on a nice condo or a home. That class of people is nearly wiped out. And so one wonders what is going to happen here. But the thing I was getting at here is the day after the election was over, it didn't matter if it was Republican or Democrat, every damn one of them has forgotten all about fighting for the consumer against the insurance people. Our new governor here, Mr. Charlie Crist, our first gay governor here in Florida, Charlie Crist took, I think the number is, don't hold me to it, but it was somewhere close to $800,000 from the insurance agency. As insurance industry, $800,000, and he said, "Well, yeah, but I'm going to use that money to fight for you." Yeah, the insurance company gave me $800,000, but you see, they gave it to me knowing that I was going to take the money and fight against them. Oh, okay, Charlie, that makes a lot of sense, I think. But every one of them, true to form, every single one of them has forgotten all about it. We're not hearing anything about insurance reform now here in the state all of a sudden. How did that happen? No insurance reform, Republican and Democrat alike. All of a sudden, it's old news. Well, On the state level, that's bad enough. On the national level, we're just going to have to stay on these people. And we will. I promise you, we will. Hey, we're going to pause for the news. Coming up at the top of the hour, I want you to know that you're listening to the Head On Radio Network, the Guy James Show. We're going to have news for about, 5 minutes or so, and then we'll be back with some more interesting talk. Stay tuned, everybody.
This is the Quality News Network. In Jordan today, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert met with King Abdullah II for talks. It was a surprise visit aimed at reviving the Middle East peace process. Jordan's king has offered to host a meeting in his country to resume the peace talks between Israel and the Palestinians, as well as between Hamas and Fatah. In recent days, despite a ceasefire declared on Sunday, the fighting between the two groups, Hamas and Fatah, battling for power, has intensified in Gaza. The most recent fierce gun battles left at least 4 people dead and at least 18 wounded, including some children. NBC News reports that the U.S. Navy is building up its strength in the Persian Gulf to counter aggressive actions by Iran in recent Iranian naval exercises. A second aircraft carrier will likely be added to the region, according to U.S. Central Command. The Pentagon now reports that Muqtada al-Sadr, the anti-American Shiite Muslim cleric, is more dangerous than al-Qaeda in Iraq. From mid-August to mid-November, sectarian militant and insurgent attacks in Iraq increased by 22%. Each week during that time, there were nearly 1,000 Iraqis, and Iraqi civilians suffered most of the casualties. The Washington Post reports there is a growing split between President Bush and the Joint Chiefs of Staff over whether to increase the U.S. troop numbers in Iraq. The White House is considering the deployment of an additional 15,000 to 30,000 troops to Iraq for about a 6 to 8 month mission. However, the Joint Chiefs warn that there is no defined mission, and this may set up the U.S. for larger problems in the future. In Beijing, the six-nation talks about North Korea's nuclear program continued today. The United States had the first face-to-face meetings with the North. An assistant U.S. Secretary of State reports that there were no breakthroughs. 3 former top executives of Fannie Mae are being sued by federal regulators to recoup more than $115 million in pay. The execs, including former CEO Franklin Raines, received the pay while the company misstated its earnings. Those 2004 accounting problems ultimately led to a $400 million penalty. A Libyan court today convicted and sentenced to death by firing squad 5 Bulgarian nurses and a Palestinian doctor. They were accused of deliberately infecting 400 children with the HIV virus in the late 1990s. And last month, First Lady Laura Bush had a malignant skin tumor removed from her right shin. The White House said it was a private matter. You're listening to QNN.
Hugh Hauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're there to talk with people about their business banking. Here's a guy who not only banks at the bank, he helped build the bank building.
Yes, sir.
Do you find the fact that it's a local bank appealing?
Yes, that's just it. It was the local people in the community that originally started the bank, and that's why he got involved.
It's a local bank with big bank benefits. It's part of a network of banks. Does that mean anything to you?
Absolutely. Having a bank that can handle a big project really helps, because some banks aren't tailored to handle big business, and they can handle the big business for sure. They have no limitations to what they can do for your business.
I do my business banking and my personal banking with them.
Both?
Absolutely.
You're double dipping.
You bet.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks, available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Google and NASA have teamed up to provide the public with more of the space agency's imagery through the Internet. The Insurance Institute for Highway Safety conducted tests on popular fuel-saving economy cars. It gave its lowest safety rating to 4 of the small vehicles, including the Toyota Yaris, Scion XB, Hyundai Accent, and Kia Rio. The second-largest Wall Street investment house, Morgan Stanley, today announced it will split off its Discover credit card brand sometime next year. Discover is the fourth-largest credit card, and it has steadily been losing market share to competitors. Shareholders of Euronext today today overwhelmingly approved the $14 billion takeover by the New York Stock Exchange. The deal, which still needs regulatory approval, would create the first transatlantic equities market. Tomorrow, NYSE shareholders will hold a vote on the deal. In November, inflation at the wholesale level increased by the largest amount in more than 30 years, according to the Labor Department. The producer price index was up 2%. That's the highest jump since November of 1974. New home construction in the U.S. rose in November by 6.7%. However, building permits were down by 3%. Light sweet crude is trading at $63.40 a barrel. And on Wall Street this hour, the Dow is down 1 point, the Nasdaq is down 13, and the S&P 500 is flat. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Guy James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Fly! Fly, do you hear me? Give my creation! Fly!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered a restricted broadcast area. You have entered a restricted broadcast.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there, we're halfway home, a little past halfway home on the Guy James Show today. And love to have you give us a call if you are interested in discussing what we have to say today. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. We do hope you'll give us a call today. What's on your mind? Anything? Are you done with your Christmas shopping? Do you do any Christmas shopping? Do you celebrate Christmas? Some people don't. Some people do. Some people are celebrating Hanukkah right now, and happy Hanukkah to all of those folks. And don't forget Festivus. All you Seinfeld fans. We have to do our Festivus celebration as well. I just saw that rerun the other night. One of the funniest ones that I think that Seinfeld ever done. You know, I guess you got to have a certain type of sense of humor for the Seinfeld show. I think I've seen every one of their episodes over the years. I'm probably like the old Rocky Horror Picture Show people who can sit there and recite the movie. Hey, did you ever go to one of those? I did, up in Columbus, Ohio one time. What a trip. What a trip, watching the people watching the Rocky Horror Picture Show. One of the most bizarre sights I think I've ever seen, but nonetheless quite entertaining for me to go see that. It's just like the professional wrestling. I had this old friend, Scrib Poorman was his name, and the only guy named Scrib I ever knew. Must have been a nickname. But Scrib was a dyed-in-the-wool wrestling fan back in the days when the Sheik and this, what would they call him, the Sergeant Slaughter. I'm trying to recall some of the other names. But they had all these wrestlers. You know, it was the old, same as it is now. And only not quite as fancy as it is now from what I can see with the smoke and mirrors. And everybody has a microphone today. But the wrestlers were coming to town at the local Coliseum. And so Scrib says, come on, guys, go with me to the wrestling matches. And I'm going, oh, no, Scrib, I don't want to go to that. No, he said, I've got front row seats. So he talked me into going with him. And we go down there, and, you know, I can't really tell you how much happened, what happened in the ring, because it was far more entertaining watching the fans than it was the action in the ring. This Sheik guy was wrestling Sergeant Slaughter. I don't know why I remember those two, but I do. You know, the Sheik was the villain, and Sergeant Slaughter, as you might expect, came in dressed in military fatigues and American flag and all that, and the Sheik would grab the flag and, you know, spit on it and all that sort of stuff, and he had some kind of a Arab flag, you know, back when the Arabs weren't even all that unpopular in this country. But, it, you know, it was a good versus evil thing that they still do today. But it was such a hoot sitting there watching the people, and sitting just a couple of people down from me was this old lady. She was she wasn't that old, but she was in her late 70s or 80s, I would say. And it had been raining coming to the Coliseum, and she had an umbrella. And this Sergeant Slaughter threw this Sheik guy out of the ring down onto the mat right in front of where we were. And this old lady gets up and whacks that wrestler over the head with that umbrella until he saw stars. It was the funniest thing of the evening. But the amazing part about it was these people that thought this was all legit. And they were sitting there, you know, just screaming and hollering and sweating and swearing and going on and on and on. It's the funniest thing I've ever been to. You know, I used to go to the comedy club, but I never saw anything as funny as watching that wrestling audience that night. That was the best. I wish I had a film of it. I really do. How did I get started talking about wrestling? I don't know. I do want to talk about what I consider to be the Scrooge. I was going to say the Scrooge of the year. I'm going to give the Scrooge of the decade to this guy. A guy from Pittsfield, Maine, and the Scrooge's name is Cyril Olivares. Cyril, you're an SOB if there ever was one. Let me tell you the story real quickly. A Pittsfield, Maine man faces an assault charge after allegedly striking a disabled veteran with a metal chair during an argument over unpaid rent. Cyril Olivares went to Gerald Barber's home and confronted him about rent money. Olivares said that it was unpaid. Pittsfield police officer Jeff Van Destine said. Barber, 58, who has extremely limited movement and can only communicate in one-word sentences, apparently raised his cane toward Olivares but never struck him. Van Destine said that that's when Olivares allegedly picked up a metal kitchen chair and repeatedly struck Barber. Van Destine said it took Barber nearly a half hour to walk a few feet to his neighbor's home for help. He was taken by ambulance to Sebasticook Valley Hospital in Pittsfield and treated for injuries to his face, shoulders, ribs, arm, and elbow. Olivares, 54, a former local school board member, was charged Saturday with simple assault. Van Destine said the charge may be upgraded because a weapon, the metal chair, was used in the attack. The case is to be reviewed by the district attorney. Police were familiar with Mr. Barber, a Vietnam veteran, because of his medical problems. Police were called to his home last week because he fell, and when they arrived, they discovered Barber's home was not heated. The house was freezing, Van Destine said. Heat has since been provided, but hospital employees later discovered that Barber had not been eating properly because people delivering meals leave his home before he can get to the door. What a story. It's hard to believe. Well, no, it isn't. Not anymore. There was a time in my life when it was hard to believe that there are people like this Cyril Olivares around. Fortunately, I was brought up in an area where I'm not saying there weren't any people like that, but if there were, I never knew of them. I was brought up in a time and in a place where you took care of your neighbor. You were your brother's keeper. no matter what. And the idea of picking up a metal chair and beating a Vietnam veteran that is infirmed, that not getting enough to eat, didn't have any heat in his home in Maine, for Christ's sake, is, there are no words for that. So, Ciro Olivares, you are the son of a bitch of the decade, in my opinion. Wow, what a story. All right, by the way, 866-546, that was a downer, wasn't it? But it's a true story, and I thought you ought to hear about it. 866-546-5254. I mentioned to the group I spoke in front of last night that my biggest concern right now are the Democrats. And I think my greatest fears are coming to pass. And it seems the Democratic leadership evidently is deaf. Harry Reid thinks it's okay to send more troops into Iraq. Harry Reid. The American public overwhelmingly thinks this is a bad idea. The American public let their feelings be known in the November election, but as I feared, and as many of you feared and have made your fears known, the Democratic leadership shows us once again that they don't respect the wishes of the American people. They live inside the Beltway, and therefore they're a lot smarter than the people out here. Well, pardon me, Harry Reid, but isn't that kind of a Republican attitude? I guess not. It's not owned by the Republicans anymore. I guess some of the Democrats have it as well, just like what I told you about Joe Biden earlier. You know, this administration is trying desperately to come up with a plan, any plan, that'll allow them to continue to occupy Iraq under the guise of spreading democracy that doesn't look like to the public like staying the course. New way forward. And the newest idea floating out of the White House is sending more American troops into Baghdad to help put a stop to the civil war that's now full-blown. There isn't any doubt about it. And even if we had the troops to send, which we don't, it wouldn't do a damn bit of good. It'd only result in more American lives lost. You know it, I know it, the people in Washington know it, unless they're absolutely crazy. And we're at a point in this whole thing that we have hardly any options left. We can either choose sides in the Iraq war, which would be a tragic mistake, and leave our troops right in the middle of all this thing taking fire from both sides, or we can get the hell out. Like I said last week, we can leave in shame now, or we can leave in shame later a few thousand more of our soldiers dead. Take your pick. The American people voted for getting the hell out when they put the Democrats in charge of Congress. And Harry Reid better get that straight. Bush is up to his eyeballs in this. He's got almost no support from the American people. His rubber stamp Congress is gone. Not to mention the firewall that he's had all along against any kind of an investigation of this lead up and execution of this war. It's no secret that Bush is in trouble, and I can't understand why Harry Reid would support yet another White House fantasy land idea of putting more troops in harm's way in Iraq. You know, even, and I'll get to the phones in just a second, okay? I'll be right there. Even if you don't like it, you maybe could understand why the Democrats didn't stand up to the president when they were in the minority. But now, they've acquired some power. And there is no reason whatsoever to continue to roll over for Junior Bush. Harry Reid better shape up and get on with what the American people elected the Democrats to do. And that is to force this administration to get serious about ending this war in whatever fashion they have to. If they have to have diplomatic negotiations with Iran and Syria, do it. And if that doesn't work, impeach his ass. But there is no way that we should be involved in any more of these harebrained schemes of Bush's. Let's get out of there. Let's clean up this mess. But let's not pretend, and let's not give Junior Bush the idea that he's doing anything for America. He's living in fantasy land. Sending more troops to Iraq is a ridiculous idea. And Harry Reid knows it. And I, for one, will scream from the rooftops every single day if Harry Reid goes along with this. Let's go with the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
And it's California Dave again, Guy. How are you?
Hi, Dave.
The way I'm piecing that together, the same DLC advisors that advised Hillary are advising Harry Reid that we don't want to have the Democrats at all looking like they're weak on security. We don't want Rush Limbaugh saying that about it. So they become total lying, damn hypocrites and support a criminal war rather than look bad. So I would think one of the nicest gestures that could happen is when those newly elected Democratic senators come in, that the issue get brought up of reconsidering who we have for a leader of the Democratic Party in the Senate.
Well, I've not been in favor of Harry Reid from the very beginning. I have never been satisfied with Harry Reid. And in talking to people, to insiders in Washington, I don't think anybody in the party's got a really good idea on why they put him in there, other than being a yes man, because he's not been a friend of the people, in my opinion.
He had one glowing moment, if I can recall it, and that was when he, in effect, shut down the Senate, calling for an investigation into how did we get lied into this war. And I thought, wow, that was a pretty gutty thing to do. And he was called all kinds of terrible names, and then he just shut up, and they've never investigated why we got lied into the war, and he hasn't repeated his act. So
that's right, and that so-called investigation was supposed to go on, and they were supposed to report back in a fairly short time, and it was swept under the rug, and there's never been another word said about it until you brought it up right now, Dave.
Yeah, it was this one shiny, glowing moment where it was like, wow, the guy's really going to throw a punch there, but It didn't happen, and they're still, they did. I remember all the Republicans saying, why did you do such a crazy thing? We were all starting to investigate this.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't need to do that.
That's right. That's right. I don't know. I just, he's not a strong enough man to do this. I mean, I'm sure Harry Reid's a decent guy and all that sort of thing, but I'm tired of the capitulation, and especially now. I mean, now, man. I mean, there's no excuse for it now. None.
Well, I think we'd do a lot better with the other Reed, Jack Reed from Rhode Island, or Kennedy, or Boxer, someone that's been known to take some courageous stands. And
How many times did we have a chance to filibuster some things? And you remember early on, Harry Reid said, well, we've got to pick our fights. We're in the minority. We've got to pick our fights. And as I can recall, I don't ever remember a fight over anything.
No. And, they still got that mindset that they still can get beat up if they don't go along, that they still will have the Hannitys and Limbaughs out there calling them all kinds of terrible names. Well, they're going to do that
anyway. You bet they do. It's, that right-wing smear machine is in full gear. It's going to be, it's in high gear, and it's going to continue on. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to Washington. I'm hoping to get to talk to some people about hopefully doing something about it. But
well, I think it would be a really good lesson if the Democrats said, we think we'd like to rethink who we have for a leader. And I don't imagine it's going to happen. But if it does, I think that would really say you're not going to be our spokesman if you're going to go against what the people elected you to do.
Yeah, it's just one of those deals where you call in your political chits that you've got out, and Harry Reid evidently amassed quite a few, and I've heard no rumblings at all about the rest of the Congress wanting to change his leadership role. I haven't heard it, not a peep from anybody there. Only from
the
people.
They have to be intelligent people. I can't believe that they would support a criminal war. They must know that this whole thing is Halliburton and the Bushes and the Cheneys stuffing their pockets with the Treasury funds, controlling oil, their global domination plan. Not anything at all legitimate about that war, and they have to know it.
Sure, they know it.
Listeners know it.
There's too many of them involved, Dave. There's too many of them involved. Too many lobbyists knocking on too many doors, both Republican and Democrat. And until we change that, until we have a meaningful campaign finance reform, I don't know how it's ever going to change. We're never going to convince 535 legislators in Washington to be honest and open and do things the right way instead of listening to lobbyists and leaning. We're never going to convince them to do that.
God, I tell you, saving this country is going to be no small feat. We need more Guy James out there firing from the hip because too many of them just cave in.
They do. It's a way of life, and it's a sad testament to the party. It really is.
Well, you do a wonderful thing, sir.
Thanks, Dave. Good to hear from you.
Take care.
The Golden State, California, up near Eureka. I do want to talk to you about that. I made myself a note here to be sure and mention this today. I am going to Washington again in a few weeks to, number one, going to be there for a little conference during the State of the Union week. And also to continue my crusade to convince elected Democratic leaders that in the long run, it's pure folly to think that Democrats can compete with Republicans year after year because of the miserable state of the liberal progressive media. Let's face it. We have no meaningful presence in the media. And it pains me to say that. And the leaders of our party still refuse to recognize the problem. And even the few who do recognize it have failed to help do anything about it at all. I started this campaign about 4 years ago, right after we started the show. We started to talk to leading Democrats about let's do something about the media. And since that time, yes, there's been an effort. Air America was started. I don't know, and I'm not saying this. Well, I think that it hasn't done a hell of a lot for our cause. Let me just put it that way. Let me explain something to you that you might already know about, but I'm gonna talk about it anyway. A couple of years ago, a few leading Democrats helped get a so-called progressive voice on the radio. And they did so not because they recognized the need for a liberal progressive voice. They did it because the guy representing this so-called progressive broadcaster was the husband of an influential senator. It was a deal to help the spouse of a senator, not to help the Democratic Party. They raised some money to get the program off the ground, and they think they've done their part. Not so. We still have almost no media presence. Let's face facts here. Talk radio is very, very influential in capturing the hearts and minds of American voters. And the conservatives have a massive presence in talk radio, and we've got only a tiny fraction of what they have. And I, as you know, I've always liked to compare it to going to a football stadium, and they've got the control of the big, loud public address system, and we've got one of those little cheerleading microphones down on the sidelines. That's what it's like. I don't think that the Democratic leadership understands what's exactly happening to them in the media. And if they do understand it and not doing anything and are not doing anything about it purposefully, then they're foolish. You stop and think about it. And Dave brought this up. How often have congressional Democrats been rolled by the Republican machine? How often have they voted for something they shouldn't have and then been blamed by the Republican for the consequences? It's happened over and over again. And you can easily see it. The events typically follow a pattern. The powerful Republican media machine sets up some sort of environment that convinces the Washington politicians that it'll be very difficult politically to vote against them. And make sure that the vote happens quickly before the opposing forces have time to realize what's going on and rally enough people on the other side to demonstrate that there really is support for a non-Republican position. How many times have we seen this process at work? Oh, it's clever. It's the careful creation of a local environment that's very carefully calculated to maximize pressure on the legislator at the best possible moment. You know, the phony Republican news events, the independent media playing along and following the script, the AM radio 24-hour-a-day Republican drumbeat pounding out the lies day in, day out. And if you don't get enough of them Monday through Friday, they'll repeat them on the weekend for you like they do here in Southwest Florida. This mass of misleading and blatantly deceitful op-ed pages, filling the editorial pages, the obviously ditto head letters to the editor. You've seen some of those. They call them AstroTurf, grassroots letters that are generated by a marketing firm. This rat pack of columnists writing according to instructions, facts to them from the Heritage Foundation, and pretty soon all the news stories reflect the Republican line and repeat the Republican falsehoods. I'm so tired of seeing this. And it becomes a drumbeat of constant repetition of the same lines over and over and over again until they become the conventional wisdom. Everybody knows that, they say then. So-and-so is true. So there's no point wasting your energy trying to say that it isn't true. And then the polls show that the Republic, who've been deprived of any contrasting information, that the public solidly favors the Republican position because they haven't heard the other one. You know, the calls and the letters, they flood into congressional offices from Christian Coalition phone banks and people like that. And then what happens? The Democrats start to worry about their chances of holding on to their office if they oppose the Republicans on one vote. That's how it works in Washington. You know, then the vote comes up in the Congress, and enough Democrats afraid that Rush Limbaugh will something bad about him, and they're mired in that Washington bubble environment, cut off from their constituents back home. They vote with Republicans to get the issue through and not get it out of their way. Tax cuts, budget cuts, right-wing judges. They've compromised on health care and welfare and energy. And the Bush people they slide it past the voters as a bipartisan win for the Republicans. It's such a carefully crafted strategy. You know, we've seen this happen enough times now that we can recognize what's happening and even predict the next move. And we have done so on this show, predicted their next move. And what's really unfortunate is how the Democrats in Washington fall into the same damn trap every single time. And it's happened on terribly important issues, war and peace and life and death. It's like the right really has set up this right-wing conventional wisdom machine. And they target it at the opinion leaders, the legislators, their staffs, and all the people they associate with. Heavily funded right-wing organization. You don't know. I don't think the average person realizes. Some of my listeners know. But a lot of people just don't know how heavily funded and how hard some of these right-wing organizations work to infiltrate their method and their messages into the information that these leadership elite receive. They get those faxes in the morning from the Heritage Foundation. They get those talking points in the morning. You know, they achieve this in a lot of different ways. And one way that you all know of is they've got their very own bought and paid for media outlet like Fox and like the Washington Times and almost all of AM radio. But way beyond that, they've also worked to get the more mainstream opinion leaders under their influence, a columnist and reporters. have received large speaking fees from corporations and trade associations, and they get these free retreats that they go to where they learn about the market solutions. And everyone is certainly afraid of the shame and the humiliation should they become the target of the character assassination machine that the Republican media machine is, well, they've made it a fine art. And so that acts as some sort of a powerful incentive for the people in the media to toe the line. And reject so-called marginalized, as they call it, information sources. People like Scott Ritter and Michael Moore. Constituents that complain about election fraud. They use words like, well, credible sources. You remember the Armstrong-Williams scandal? That shows us the amount of money involved in the reach of this effort that I'm talking about. You remember Armstrong-Williams? He got $240,000 directly from the government. Imagine that. $240,000 of our tax money to do their propaganda for him. Imagine what mainstream opinion leaders are getting from the big money corporate trade associations and the right-wing think tanks. If Armstrong Williams got $240,000, the amounts of money the right is putting to their outside the election process propaganda effort, over $300 million a year, by the way, just for the think tank advocacy groups and infrastructure, that ought to warn us that most of the traditional channels through which this leadership elite get their information are likely targets of this effort. So, you know, I'm going to make my rounds in Washington again. I know full well that the information I give the Democratic legislators will probably go in one ear and out the other. But maybe, just maybe, I might get through to some of them this time. Got somebody helping me. Let's face it, in the past election, this past one was won because the Bush administration dragged the entire Republican Party down with them. And it was a freak election. And if you think it was anything else, you're wrong. The pundits are right. We didn't win because of anything we did. We won because we're not them. And that's not going to work very many times. So wish me luck on my next trip to Washington. Let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Good afternoon, Guy. Bill from Toledo.
Hi, Bill.
Real sorry to hear that you'll be going to Washington again. When you came back last time, you was in an awful foul mood.
Yeah, I remember.
Will you be broadcasting there from the DLC, that new whatchamacallit that they have there that they was going to give to you last time, and then on second thought they said, no, we don't need Guy James.
Nope, here. I haven't talked to anybody from the DNC for a long time, and I doubt that they ever call me again.
Yeah, listen, I had to wait for the second hour until you finally, I thought, what the heck, he didn't see that about Harry Reid? Is that Terry Schiavo Reid, the same one who went in, had that special thing on the floor there for Terry Schiavo? Wasn't Reid involved in that?
That'd be Harry Reid, all right.
Yeah, and is it the same Harry Reid who said we're going to pick our fights?
Yeah, he's done nothing but pick his nose so far.
Jesus, what can we do about this guy?
Well,
he's a disaster.
I've said it so many times. I really don't get the deal with Harry Reid. I really don't. If you'd asked me before he became minority leader of the Senate, he's one of the last guys I would have picked.
Oh, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. And then I read today that the Joint Chiefs of Staffs are completely against sending even one more troop over there.
Yeah, I know.
I read that today. So, I don't know, Guy. One thing I'd like to say to your callers, if they can see their way, send some money to their kitchens. I always send one to our soup kitchen here in Toledo for the homeless. That's something that I've been doing for about the last 10 or 12 years. So if they think about it, so those guys and gals can get a good meal during the holidays. And Also, I wanted to wish you and yours the best if I don't talk to you before the holidays, Guy.
Well, Bill, I appreciate that, and back at you. And I know in the Toledo area there, well, Marcy Kaptur, for one, she's always done pretty well insisting
that
people donate around the holiday times, and she's even been involved in some of those efforts. I have a great deal of respect for Marcy Kaptur.
Yeah, I really like Marcy Kaptur a lot. But one last thing I want to say to you, Guy, is everything that you wish for in the coming New Year's, I hope that you get it.
Hey, thank you.
I hope it all comes true.
Will that include that nice red Dodge Viper in my driveway? Would that include that?
just talking politics there, Guy.
Okay.
Listen, the best to you and your family for the holidays, Guy.
Thank you, Bill.
Okay, take care.
Bye now. Ah, yes, that Dodge Viper. I don't think it's going to be in my driveway. No. yes, I know those days have not passed me by. Money-wise, they have, but I can still dream. I'm always was an automobile aficionado, and I love speed, and I love sports cars. I mean, I don't have one right now, so and it's been a while. So may never get another one, but I can dream. I can just close my eyes and see myself heading across Alligator Alley, wide open in that Dodge Viper. Yes, breaking the law, I know. But it would be fun just once. It's a dream, remember. 866-546-5254. Let's hear a little something by George Bush again.
This is First Lady Laura Bush. I have the unpleasant marital obligation to introduce the President of the United States for this new limited-time feature on weeklyradioaddress.com. It's called The Warmth of a President, and it is lovingly crafted to make George W. Bush less reviled by all Americans. This week, Meeting Jesus.
It happened right there in the Bible study meeting. I looked up from a conversation I was having with some of the other men, and there he was, standing there, on the other side of the crowded room, smiling at me. Our eyes locked, and it was an instant, unbreakable connection. I felt my heart skip a beat, as they say. I examined him closely. He wore a tattered, rag-like robe. His skin was a slightly darker hue, like that of an East Indian or mulatto, and he had a face like that of the movie star Mel Gibson, but more Jewishy. He tucked his flowing golden brown hair behind his ear as he knelt down to help an injured lamb. At first I was surprised that there was a wounded farm animal in the hotel conference room, but I was touched and filled with great rejoicing when he touched that lamb with his magical healing energy to mend the creature's broken leg. The goat ran free into a field of flowers. Jesus then stood and walked over to me and said, "Give all that you have to the poor and follow me." I got a good chuckle out of this comment and looked behind me to see if he was addressing someone else. As he stood there staring intently at me, my second thought was to call hotel security. See, I did not know in those days if Jews were permitted in the Houston Hyatt. But Jesus had a soothing quality about him, which made me forget about the laws of men. Was this a vision I was having? Perhaps I had had too much to drink, I wondered.
From the audiobook edition of Destined for Destiny, the unauthorized autobiography of George W. Bush, I'm your host, First Lady Laura Bush. Thank you for listening.
Hey friends, Eric Estrada here. Just like you, I'm really into engines, but there's something else that I'm into even more. Taking care of the planet. I bet you didn't know that motor oil from one oil change dumped in a drain or on the ground can contaminate 1 million gallons of fresh water. That means that if we don't recycle it, we could be drinking it. So take your used oil to your nearest recycling center or call toll-free 1-800-CLEANUP. Remember, if you dump it, you'll drink it.
Bells will be ringing this sad, sad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone. I have no friends to wish me greeting once again. Please come home for Christmas. If not for Christmas, by New Year's night. Friends and relations, send salutations.
Ah, yes, back with you here in the last quarter hour or so of the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Glad to have all of you along with us today. You can give us a call, 866-546-5254. I was reminded by Billy Shears, the Guy James Show music director, that song we played a little earlier by Diana Krall, he gave me a little information, but I did not know that. Of course, I'm not up on showbiz all that much, but Diana Krall is married to Elvis Costello. My God, that's been a long time since I've even heard of Elvis Costello. Wonder how he's doing. Wonder if he's still performing. I suppose he is. I saw an Elvis impersonator last night. He's pretty good, too. Pretty good. About 3 or 4 years ago, we had a Elvis impersonator at a function that I attended here, and it was my job to keep him entertained at the intermissions and that kind of stuff, you know, take him back in the green room and all that sort of thing. It wasn't a green room, but it was the waiting room, let's put it that way. And the guy scared hell out of me, actually. I mean, he was a good Elvis impersonator, one of the best that I've seen. But he never came out of character. I tried to talk to the guy and say, "Hey, how you enjoy doing this and do that?" And he looked at me and like, "Do what? Thank you very much." Yeah, I mean, he never took his Elvis Presley persona off. He left it on all the time. From the time he arrived there till the time he left, he was Elvis. And you couldn't get him, come hell or high water, to come off of it. It was freaky. But I must admit, he was the best doggone Elvis impersonator I think I've ever seen. I can't remember his name anymore, but he was sure good. I have a cousin that follows there's a certain Elvis impersonator in Ohio, and he's all around that region up there. He's quite good. I can't think of his name now, but it's really something, isn't it, that here's a guy impersonating a great guy, and he's got groupies. I always found that interesting. One of my cousins says, boy, if that guy's giving a concert anyplace, she's going to be there. Do you have a crazy story like that to tell? Give me a call, 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I think tomorrow we're probably going to have a few minutes of Republican love. Lighten things up a little bit if you look at it that way. Boy, some of the Republican love is... Whew, wow. It's been getting worse over the years. They're kind of backed into a corner right now. I think they understand that the political roof is caving in on them. And they're getting a little mean about it, some of them. Now, a lot of them have just shut up. I was on my way to the banquet last night and came up on a car at a stoplight and got a Bush Cheney 04 sticker on the back of it. And you really have to wonder what the hell's in somebody's mind that's driving around with a Bush Cheney 04 sticker on their car at this particular juncture in history. You'd have to think that there's a loaded pistol in that car someplace. I would just automatically assume that. Somebody with a Bush Cheney sticker on right now is hardcore. But there are a few still around. I had the opportunity to talk to one the other day that just wouldn't come off of it. Would not come off of it. Bush and Cheney, the best people that ever had for this country, you know. And I've been trying to convince people that I think we need an intervention for Georgie right now. I think we do. And a friend of mine over at the allspinzone.com sent me a piece that they wrote there. And it's called George Bush as the Gambler. Says, as I was sitting in an airplane seat today, I think I figured out George Bush's problem with acknowledging the reality of his failed policies in Iraq. He's an addict. Bush has long acknowledged that he had a drinking problem, and most people with drinking problems have addictive personality, and booze is rarely the only thing to which they're hooked. So far, I think he's right on that. Said, when it comes to Iraq, Bush is like someone with a gambling addiction who's been losing at the blackjack table for 36 straight hours. He signed over the pink slip on his car and sold his watch and wedding ring to cover his growing debt. He also knows that his house credit is exhausted, but he's convinced to a certainty that he's only a few hands away from a winning streak. And with the Bush regime completely dismissing the findings of the vaunted Iraq study group, the latest buzzword to emote from inside the D.C. Beltway is surge, as in send a whole bunch more troops into the meat grinder. There's little question that this is going to be the preferred strategy of the same architects of the current failed strategy. Surge is also being spun by the regime and its media enablers as doubling down, a gambling reference to doubling your money on a high percentage bet. The problem is, Iraq isn't a high percentage bet yet, like a sleep-deprived gambler on a jag. Bush has become so insulated from the reality around him that he truly believes that if he goes all in, that he's got a chance to win his money back. So he's going to go with the John McCain blackjack system, throw in another 20, 30, or 50,000 chips onto the felt, because in his Bill Bennett brainstem, he knows he's only one card away from that winning streak. You think I'm kidding? This is how addicts rationalize their behavior. And Americans are like the enabling spouse who waits at home, fretting that the bill collectors are going to be showing up at the door any moment, while somewhere downtown, George is making his last play at the table before casino management runs him out of the hall. We Need an Intervention. Great piece at allspinzone.com. My feelings exactly about George W. Bush. He is an addict. A hopeless addict. And it's obvious from his behavior. It's obvious from the way he acts, all the little quirks he has and so forth. He's an ex-boozer. I've had some people, some very learned people in the know, say that his little personal quirks and so forth. He has all the moves of a cocaine addict, a former cocaine addict, we hope. Man, that's tough. Do you have any addictions? I did. I was a smoker for a well, I wasn't one of the most stupid smokers that there ever has been on the planet. I will freely admit that. I started smoking like when I was, I don't know, 35. That's kind of weird, isn't it? And I smoked for probably 10, 12 years at least, and I quit. Tried that, that gum. I can't think what it's called. Nicorette gum. And it was, I bought one of those packages, and it's been years ago, been 10, 12 years ago at least. I bought the Nicorette gum, and I was going to use it to stop smoking, and it tasted so foul. I hear it's better now, but it tasted so foul that after using it about a week, I quit using it and just quit cold turkey. And fortunately, been able to remain clean of tobacco for a long, long time. I will admit, every once in a while, ever so rarely, once every 6 months or so, I see somebody smoking a cigarette at the wrong time or something, and there's something inside my brain that, gee, wouldn't it be good to have a cigarette? But I've never done it, and I know I won't. So I understand addiction. Cigarettes are definitely one, and I kicked it. But it's an odd thing. A lot of people, like it's, that piece said, that have more than one addiction. I happen to really like good liquor. I haven't had a drink. I can't tell you when. And if I never had another drink, it wouldn't bother me at all. And it was always that way. I was one of those people that at New Year's Eve, I'd have a few drinks. Never drink anything during the year. Or maybe an ice cold beer, like, three times during the summer. I don't know. It just was always a treat. And I really liked it. And I can, I can probably sit here and conjure up the taste of an ice cold beer right now. It sounds really good to me, but I won't have one. I could. I'm a weirdo, I guess. You would think as well as I really, my grandfather told me when I was a young man, he said, Guy, did you ever see, my grandpa's name was Guy, by the way. Loved my grandfather. He said, if you see people drinking, and you've all seen this, you see somebody taking a drink of whiskey or whatever, and making a terrible face, said if you see them do that, why do they drink if it tastes that bad to them? They're just drinking to get drunk for the psychological effects and physical effects of the whole thing. Don't ever do that. And I never did. Never did. The only time I ever took a drink is if it tasted good to me. little Black Velvet or, what was it, Crown Royal? But goodness, it's been a long, long time. Got a liquor cabinet full of liquor, and then all with the cap still sealed. People give you some at Christmas time and all that. I should do some re-gifting with that now, shouldn't I? Some of it's aged pretty well. I don't know how long whiskey lasts, but that'd be good. Well, why am I telling you this? I don't know. Why did? We were talking about George Bush's addictions. He's addicted to power, that's for sure, and he's addicted to having his own way, and he's addicted to being a lousy, spoiled little brat. He's never been told in his whole life, evidently, what's what. And the American people are starting to tell him what's what. And he doesn't like it. He doesn't want to hear it. I see the people down in Texas, even in Dallas, I think it's in Dallas, are saying they don't want his damn presidential library on their campus. I like that attitude. I really do. I wouldn't want it there either. It would be a disgrace, the George W. Bush Presidential Library. I guess if you get impeached, you probably still get one. I don't know, but they're trying to raise $500 million for it. And I hate to see that happen, but never been anybody less deserving of a nice presidential library than him. Not that I can think of. Well, my goodness, where's the time gone today? My God. It's 45 seconds away from the end of the show here on the Head On Radio Network. You've been listening to the Guy James Show. We'll be back tomorrow, live tomorrow. We will not be live on Thursday. I have a commitment that I must keep. And I regret the fact that I won't be live on Thursday, but we'll put a good show up for you on Thursday. So, get your Christmas shopping done. Get yourself in a good mood for the holidays. Whatever kind of a holiday you are celebrating, if none at all, get yourself in a good mood. And I'll see you tomorrow. And don't ever forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's